So, you want to talk about cars? Ferrari, GTO, Bentley, CRX, and even down to your great-granddad's Peerless. Welcome to No Driving Gloves, the car talk authority, where experience, knowledge, and controversy share the same seat. Enjoy the ride. Now your hosts, John and Derek.
Hey, everybody. It's another Thursday night. I hope you can hear me. I'm trying to check a few things. I'm playing it solo right now. Excuse me, trying to catch up. Sorry about that. Took a drink right before the show and kind of went down the wrong pipe. Let me see here. You're going to have to excuse me while I pop over to one of my media sites and make sure that my voice is coming through. This would be horrible for me to talk to you for a...
Voice is coming
through. I guess it is coming through. So we're set with that. But Derek had an emergency pop up just before the show, literally just before the show. He may join us. I do not know. I had told him, you know, there's priorities in life and cars are fun. Life sometimes sucks. Nothing big. Everybody's okay, but I felt he needed to address it and not have to worry about podcasting with us tonight. So I thank everybody for joining us. It's been one of those weeks for me. I can probably talk about the wonderful driving issues. We always talk about that. Did order a new toy for me today. If it winds up working, we'll put a link up to it on our website, but I'm not sure. Bought one of the car refrigerators a couple weeks ago. I bought one of these auto exec desks and absolutely love it. And I decided since I travel so much and we're getting into the summer months and getting ice every morning and stuff at the hotels kind of stinks. I bought a 12 volt refrigerator to go on the back of the car. And I guess the next step will be a microwave, but we'll see how that one plays out. Basically a whole 24 cans of soda, or it's that kind of volume inside. Got the thing today, plugged it in. Thing cooled down from 74 degrees, excuse me, right down. Actually, it was set at -4. I set it to 35. It was 35 degrees within like 20 minutes on the eco mode, not even this super fast cooling mode. So I've got some hopes for it. If we got some listeners out there or viewers, really need you to chime in because I'm going to try to play with this topic that we were talking with. Derek was really looking forward to it. We might revisit it in a week or two with him here after he's had a chance to listen to the show. But this was inspired. Can old be new again? It was inspired by a Facebook post that I saw. And I'm going to read the post. I'll take the risk, I guess. I don't think it's, I mean, it's public. It's a public site. But this person posted, "Hi, I will be needing a new car within the next couple of years. And I am considering getting a 1950s or 1960s car because I love all things 1950s and even exclusively dressed 50s for a while. However, I am a college student and cannot afford something like a 57 Chevy Bel Air. But I read online that there are other 50s and 60s cars resembling Bel Airs that someone can buy for under $10,000. Any suggestions on what kinds of cars from that time period to be on the lookout for? And that might fit my budget. Getting a 1957 Chevy Bel Air or another car that resembles one would be a dream come true for me." 108 responses to this. A couple of them are mine. I don't know if Derek ever saw or chimed in on this one. I don't know if any of our actual viewers and listeners, because I know some of them are on the same group on Facebook. my response right away was, you can do anything you want. I mean, that's what I always say, you know, do what you want. Who cares what society tells you what to do? You got one life, enjoy it. You know, we talked last week about the Amelia Island or the Amelia and Moda, Miami. And one guy's got a bunch of money and said, this is what I want to do. So F it. Turned out to be a pretty good weekend for both of them, it looks like. Really wanted to hear Derek's report back because he did go to the Amelia last weekend. But, so I said, you can do anything you want. The points above are accurate. Repairs, performance, safety. But personally, I would advise buying something modern, such as a Ford Ranger or Nissan Frontier for the $5,000 to $8,000 range. And save up for the classic. You know, maybe look at one with a modern engine or a chassis swap. This is where Will would come in. But you get the looks with some of today's niceties, good air conditioning, modern performance, a little bit better handling, especially if you get the chassis swap. If you pay cash for that small pickup and then make yourself save $300 to $400 a month, roughly the standard car payment most of us hope we're making, it'll be just a few years before you can get a quality dream car, and then you will have the pickup as a backup. And on a side note, I think she provided this week's topic on the podcast, and we talked a little bit about the podcast. And you know, one reason I suggested that is, I mean, you can come out of pocket for this with a little bit of cash. Buy that Nissan or Ford Ranger, something like that. And the reason I threw out a pickup truck was because then you can use it when you need a pickup truck, and you can use it maybe to run parts, possibly depending on the type of car you buy in that, even maybe use it as a tow vehicle. Maybe you go ahead and step up and buy a 10-year-old F-150 or something. But it's always nice to have a pickup in the stable, even if you drive it once every 3 or 4 months. You know, right now I want to get a new TV for the living room. And guess what? A Camry, a Mini, and a Fiesta don't exactly fit like a 65-inch, 75-inch TV. Ironically, the Fiesta, four-door Fiesta, if you measure it out, I should be able to get a 65-inch TV in there without a box. Unlike the Camry or the Mini. The Mini, I can get it in, no problem. It's just going to hang out the back a foot or two. But I just kind of found it weird that the little four-door sedan Fiesta could actually, with the back seats folded down, get a 65-inch TV without the box in it. Whole side note. But that's one of the reasons I, you know, threw out the pickup. Good thing to have. You know, the classic's going to give you trouble. It's going to break. So it's nice to have that second car. And if you're able to buy that pickup cash, make yourself a car payment for 3 years or 4 years. Say you do the $400 a month. You're saving $4,800 a year. In 4 years, you've got almost $20,000 put back to go out and buy a pretty decent classic cash. If you're in a hurry, in 2 years, you got $10,000. You can go out and you get a lot of decent stuff for $10,000. I mean, the original poster here was talking about, you know, a 57 Chevy Bel Air. Now maybe you're not going to go out and get that, but you probably can find yourself a nice 210 four-door. You might be able to find yourself, you know, I'm sure you could get into a Ford of that era, probably get into a 60s era station wagon real easy. Hell, it's tough, but if you watch, you can even get into some, you know, 65, 66 Mustangs occasionally for that kind of money. If not, you definitely can get into a Ford Falcon like Derek owns. And I think you probably get one of those for $6,000 to $10,000, and you can have something that's pretty reliable, drivable. And so I don't think it's a crazy idea. I don't think it's that far-fetched. I really think it's a plausible idea. Now, the things that you do come up with that you know, set, let's pick a, what do I want to use? Well, we'll just do that Falcon. Say we pick a 62 Ford Falcon, four-door, and you're going to drive it. You're going to have fun with it. You know, you're going to have your classic. It's going to be a little bit different. It's not going to be run-of-the-mill for everybody. And you want to use it daily. You've got that pickup truck for backup. But one nice thing about having that pickup truck is you are going to have to insure this Falcon. You go down to your local everyday insurer, State Farm, Geico, Progressive, Allstate, and you insure it and you wreck it, you're going to end up giving the car away because it's going to be totaled. You know, you're going to have all kinds of issues with classics. So you might want to carry a classic policy on it. And of course, that provides you some driving limitations. Now, those driving limitations, they can, what do I want to say? Really put a stranglehold on you, but it allows you to drive the vehicle with a, I mean, a lot of these places are reasonable amounts of miles now. And, you know, you can enjoy drive it for pleasure in that, driving it back and forth to work and to this grocery store, you're probably pushing it, but you do have that, but you're required to have that other car. Hence, that's why that pickup's sitting in your driveway. It just adds, it adds that layer that you're going to have that, or if you do have an accident, you do have it traditionally insured, you're able to buy it back from the insurance company and do the repair work, which is what leads you to the next thing, is the repair work on a 60s era vehicle or a 50s era vehicle requires a mechanic, not a modern day parts changer, a mechanic. Derek and I touched on this a couple of weeks ago when I talked about having brakes done on the Fiesta. And of course I could have done it myself and taken the rotors off and probably went and got them turned. I'm not sure. I'm not even sure what the thickness was. I asked for the specs and forgot to get it when I was there. Actually, I should have got the old parts back because I'm kind of curious if when I had the tires done, that's where the rotors became warped, as when they mounted the wheels back and used their fancy torque sticks or whatever and their air guns. Whole nother story. But it's going, you know, it's going to, and having the ability to do that work. And like I said, buy the car back from the insurance company and do the repairs. Or, but you need that mechanic. You need somebody who can actually troubleshoot. If you're not able to, you need to have a mechanic, or you need to have a friend who can help teach you and learn. Because, you know, I always sit there and go, you know, hey, in 62, you drove a Falcon all the time. I've been looking at some 380 SL, 560 SL Mercedes convertibles from 83, 88, that kind of age limit. I don't need our age. I'm not sure what chassis number that is. Like I say, I don't like to play chassis numbers that often. Or even think back to my CRX that I so longingly want. They were great cars. Hell, I drove my CRX every day back in 1991, back in 1992. Hell, even in 2000, 2003, I was driving a CRX every day and using it as a commuter car. But they did break. Will that play out now? We're 20 years beyond when I was driving a CRX. Okay, maybe I was doing it back in 08, 09 too. So maybe we're 15 years beyond the last time I daily drove a CRX. You can do it, but I mean, even the best CRX was 108 horsepower. I can't think of very few. There's two or three cars out now that have less than that. I mean, so you're very anemic in your performance. But I'm still focusing on, I guess, the repair work. You're going to have to know how to fix these things because, say you do buy that Ford Falcon 62, Ford dealership's not going to work on it. You're going to have that specialty shop. I know we have a couple in town here that will work on your older classic cars. We have some that focus on, you know, your British classic cars and some that focus on your German classic cars, some that kind of do it all. But you have very talented, qualified people that are able to troubleshoot and not just change parts. And that's where I kind of got with this. You know, we took a modern Ford in, get the brakes done. It's easier to take all the parts off, because I will bet it's really difficult to hire somebody at what one of these turn them repair shops wants to pay a mechanic that can read a set of calipers or, you know, dial calipers or it's sad to know that it's just change a part, hope it works, change a part, hope it works, change a part, hope it works. And it's never just change a part, because when one part fails, it's usually failing because something else is failing. And now you're dealing with, you have that all original 62 Ford Falcon. Now you're dealing with a 60-year-old car and 60-year-old parts. They're going to break and fail. If you buy a 62 Ford Falcon that's totally restored, yay, it sounds great. It all looks new. Everything's brand new. Everything's been done. But what was the quality of the work? What was the quality of the restorer? Where did they get the parts? Did they use quality parts, or did they do it as cheap as they can? Was it a TV show restoration where it's, you know, a rattle can and makes everything look pretty, but when you really go behind the scenes, it's all full of Bondo, etc. So, you know, you've got that. You really have to educate yourself before you go in and buy one of these things. Maybe it would pay to have a pre-purchase inspection done. It definitely would pay to spend $100 on a paint meter if you're really looking for a car that you're going to use as a daily driver. You know, as I said in my post, the repairs are always an issue. And then we've kind of already touched on the performance. The performance is a little bit of an issue here, because while it might have been the fastest, greatest thing in the world, even with, say, okay, we're going to go, we're buying an all original 11,000 mile 1976 Corvette that sold new with 150-ish horsepower. Any electric car is going to beat you there. I mean, it's a Corvette, but mom's minivan, that Toyota Sienna, is going to out-drag race you. Hell, if you bought a 77 Ferrari 308, that minivan's going to out-drag race you. So what was top-of-the-line performance just a few years ago is run-of-the-mill, possibly even slower. I mean, when I had my 1991 Lotus Elan M100, it was, when it was sold new in 91, 0 to 60 in 6.2 seconds, which was a pretty respectable 0 to 60 time. I mean, I'm of that era that 5 and 6 seconds was pretty damn quick to 60. Just about everything on the road now will do 0 to 60 in that 6-second range or better. I mean, you've got Elon Musk coming out this week talking about the new Tesla Roadster, which will be, quote, available for actual purchase and deliveries beginning in 2025. We'll see if that happens. I hope so, Elon, because you did originally talk about this car in 2017 with its rocket thrusters to help with acceleration, possibly deceleration. And then supposedly these will also turn and face straight down and you can make this car hover. I don't know if I've ever had a need to make my car hover. But then again, I've never had a need for my car to flap its doors and open and close its gull wings and play Christmas tunes either. It's kind of cute to see probably once or twice. Oh, I've gotten some comments, and unfortunately, that screen's too far away for me to read. Excuse me, I'm going to get close to the screen here. I don't know how to make this bigger. Jason is commenting that I'm looking at a chassis 107 for that SL Mercedes. And carb engines are harder to maintain. Fuel injection is less maintenance. Only drawback to older cars. I hear that all the time. that, oh, we need our fuel injection. We need our fuel injection. Yeah, it's nice to walk out and the car just start. But Jesus, we've dealt with carburetors since the 1886 Benz patent motor wagon, all the way up to the last carbureted vehicle was an Isuzu pickup truck sold in 1995. So for 110 years, we made carburetors work. Yes, fuel injection's better, and that would be one of the first things I would probably look at doing if I wanted to make a daily driver classic car and I was starting with a classic, is doing a fuel injection conversion. But then again, I saw a conversation this week about a shop that has acquired a Triumph Spitfire 1500 that has this like $5,000 Haltech fuel injection system on it. That's more than what most Spitfires are worth. Did we really need to go that far? And I'll be honest, when I was reading that, I'm going, I don't even like putting Petronics on older British cars. Points work. Points are easy. If they fail, you know where the failure is. When your Petronics doesn't work, what is it? And there is no field fixes unless you find another Petronics. Not sure what Jason means by driving on water, but we're driving on water. I wish there was a way to make that bigger. I wonder if I push some of these buttons on this keyboard. Oops, how about if we go to the right screen here? I made my Facebook post bigger. Oh, yeah, now I can read what Jason's saying. I don't need to look at myself that much. Or anybody else who wants to comment. But we're, you know, these are, I guess he mentioned safety, and he's absolutely right. There is that video out, and I should have grabbed it and been able to play it on the show, but then that really hurts you audio podcasters, of the, what is it, a 2010 Chevrolet Impala crash test compared to a 1959 Impala crash test. And yes, the 59 Impala just about disintegrates because there are no crumple zones. There are, you know, no 3-point seat belts. And Derek and I talked a few weeks ago about, Elon Musk, reason for hover, driving on water. Which I have a whole comment. You're distracting me, Jason. I'm going to go down a Cybertruck thing. But now let's see if I can get back to where I was with the safety. Is Derek and I talked a few weeks ago about adding 3-point harnesses and seatbelt modifications and that to classic cars. And both him and I understand the desire to, but both of us have apprehensions in doing it. So there is definitely a safety issue. To be honest, if you crash that Falcon into a Miata, I bet you the Miata has a better chance of surviving than the Falcon does, even with the weight differences and that. The driver in the Miata is going to be in a safer position than that of the Falcon, no matter what type of accident, except maybe a broadside into the Miata's driver's side. So, there are so many considerations. Keith Martin, publisher of Sports Car Market, he wrote an editorial many years ago when he was first talking about getting the first car for his son. And, Keith can pretty much acquire any car that he wants. And he was thinking a Bug Eye Sprite would be wonderful, 58. 59 Austin Healey Bug Eye Sprite, think MG Midget also, because that's what Keith learned to drive on back in the 70s, maybe. Totally different world. You know, again, Corvettes are 150 horsepower at that time. Bug Eye Sprite might be 48, 50 horsepower. So it's only a third of the horsepower, but a Bug Eye Sprite still 48, 50 horsepower. Corvettes are now 600 horsepower. Your mom's minivan's 300 horsepower. Or your minivan. You should have a minivan, most practical car on the planet. But it's the performance. He realized that it's not the safest car to learn to drive in because of the size, because of the safety, because of the performance. You can't get out of the way. That's one of the nice things. You know, people talk about, why do you need to go fast? And we'll get into a topic in the near future about GPS regulated speed limits. There's times that you actually need to drive faster than the speed limit to, for evasive maneuvers or to get out of a bad situation. We'll put it that way. And if you can't accelerate quickly, or if you can't brake quickly, or if you can't do a quick, safe lane change, any of that, it adds to the fear factor of driving that older car. I had opportunity a few years back to drive a 1950 Plymouth. Oh, I can't remember what model it was. It was donated to the museum, and Mr. Barber actually thought about going ahead and we're going to put license plates on this car because it's a road car. We can use it on the road car. A lot of things in the museum are race cars and can't be technically driven on the road. But he really looked at the idea of putting plates on it and it kind of being a car that could be going to shows and that to promote the museum. We decided against that, just a lot of additional thoughts that go into that when you're running a business and the net worth and size and the liability that you put yourself at. But in that, I was doing shakedowns and taking it out, driving it through subdivisions and, you know, back roads. Love driving it. Great car. Would I wanted to hop in it and drive to Atlanta? No, I don't, you know, it might be capable of 70 miles an hour. Is it going to be capable of 70 miles an hour for 3 hours straight, 4 hours straight? I doubt it. Or it's going to be extremely miserable because of where the engine's going to be turning RPM.